Chapter 38. Now on the following day, when the Romans resumed the assault, the Judeans, from the confidence inspired by their unexpected successful resistance on the previous day, made a fresh sally and offered a much more stubborn resistance. Indeed, the Romans on their side proved more resolute opponents. For they were inflamed to anger by shame regarding a lack of instant victory as being equal to defeat. So for 5 days, the Romans indeed incessantly renewed their assaults, while the garrison of Yodfot sallied out and made a more stubborn defense from the walls. Nor were the Romans dismayed by their toils in the taking of the city. Now Yodfot is almost entirely built on cliffs. Indeed, it is surrounded on 3 sides by ravines so deep that sight fails in the attempt to fathom the abyss. But the city is only accessible from the north side, where it has straggled sideways up a descending spur of the mountains. Now, when I had previously enwalled the city, I enclosed this quarter as well within my wall, in order to prevent our foes from occupying the mountain summit which overlooked it. Now the city, being concealed by other mountains which surround it, was absolutely unseen until one came right up to it. Therefore, this was indeed the strong position of Yodfot. But Vespasianos, pitting his strength against the nature of the terrain and the determination of the Judeans, resolved to press the siege more vigorously. So he summoned his commanders to take counsel with him about the assault. Now it was decided to raise earthworks against the accessible portion of the wall. At this, the whole army was sent out to procure the necessary materials. And the mountain forests surrounding the city were stripped. Besides the timber, enormous heaps of stones were collected. Indeed, some of the soldiers spread screens of hurdles over palisades as a cover for themselves from missiles from above. Protected by these means, they constructed the earthworks, suffering little or no injury from their assailants upon the walls. But others pulled the adjacent barrows to pieces, keeping their comrades constantly supplied with earth. So, with this triple division of labor, not a man was idle. Now the Judeans also launched great boulders from the walls upon the Romans' hurdles, along with all sorts of projectiles. But even when these failed to penetrate, their crash was so loud and fearful that the workers were impeded. Now Vespasianos had his artillery machines, which numbered 160 in all, brought into position around the city, directing them to fire upon the defenders on the walls. But in one tremendous volley, The catapults sent lances whistling through the air. And the rock launchers discharged blocks the weight of a talent. And firebrands flew together with a vast multitude of arrows. With the effect, not only of driving the Judeans from the walls, but instead of rendering untenable all the space behind them which came within missile range. For even the artillery fire was also reinforced by a simultaneous volley from a host of Arabian archers, and both javelin throwers and slingers. Although the Judeans were kept from warding off the Romans from above, they did not remain inactive. For parties of them both sallied out in brigandic ambushes and stripped off the enemy's hurdles and assailed the exposed workmen. And whenever the workmen fell back, the Judeans demolished the earthworks and set fire to the palisades and hurdles. Finally, Vespasianus traced the cause of this injury to the gaps between the earthworks. For these intervals afforded the Judeans a loophole for an assault. So, he united the various hurdles and simultaneously closed up his force, with the result that further Judean encroachments were repressed. Now that the embankment was rising and almost on a level with the parapets, I thought it would be shameful if I was unable to devise some countermeasure for the city's salvation. So, I summoned the masons and directed them to increase the height of the wall. But when they protested that the building was impossible under such a hail of missiles, I invented the following protection for them. At my directions, palisades were fixed to the wall, and over these were spread newly flayed oxen hides. Indeed, in order that the stones hurled by the machines would be caught in their folds, while the other projectiles would even glance off their surface, and their moisture would extinguish the firebrands. Under this screen, the builders, working in safety both night and day, raised the wall to a height of 20 cubits. And indeed, they erected numerous towers, but crowned the wall with a stout parapet. At this spectacle, the Romans, who imagined themselves already masters of the city, were greatly disheartened and were struck with astonishment both by my design and the perseverance of its citizens. Now Vespasianus was also provoked at the cleverness of this stratagem and at the audacity of the Yodfatians. For emboldened by their newly built fortification, the citizens recommenced their sallies against the Romans. So every day, parties of them came into conflict with the Roman besiegers, both employing all the ruses of brigandic ambushes and pillaging whatever fell in their path, as well as setting fire to the rest of the Roman works. This continued until Vespasianus, ordering his army to cease battling, resolved to resort to a blockade in order to starve the city into surrender. for he supposed that by their lack of provisions, the defenders would petition him for mercy, or, if they remained obdurate to the last, would perish of hunger. Also, if it came to a battle, he concluded that he would conquer them far easier if, after an interval, he renewed his attack upon famished opponents. So, he directed his men to keep a strict guard on all the city exits.